The following is a presentation of Second City Works, delivered by your earbuds at WGN Plus.
Welcome to Second City Works, Getting to Yes And. I'm Kelly Leonard, creative advisor for the Second City. We are brought to you by Second City Works, which is the B2B arm of the world-famous Second City Theater. You can find us at secondcityworks.com. And this is more than just a podcast. It's about getting to the yes and moment in your work and your life. The term yes and is a key pillar of improvisation. It's at the front end of creativity. It's about building on ideas and making discoveries together. This is Getting to Yes And.
Working all day for a mean little man with a clip on tie and a rub on tan. He's got me running around the office like a dog around a track. But when I get back home, you're always there to rub my back.
Welcome to Second City Works, Getting to Yes And. I'm Kelly Leonard, creative advisor for the Second City. And on this podcast, we talk to all sorts of interesting people who work at the intersection of creativity and business. We are brought to you by Second City Works, the B2B arm of the legendary comedy theater, the Second City. And you can find more information at secondcityworks.com. Today's episode is going to be a bit different than our previous episodes. Let's call this one the inside baseball episode of the work that Second City has done for decades with businesses all over the world. My guest today is Pat McKenna. Pat has worked at the Second City for decades, where he has studied as a writer, actor, and improviser, but he's done it all. He's performed, stage managed, directed, and produced and written. He has literally directed hundreds of live Second City shows for corporate audiences, and his current title is Artistic Director of Live Entertainment for Second City Works. Pat McKenna, welcome to Getting to Yes And.
Thanks for having me.
So, Pat, to give people a frame of reference for what you do, can you give us like a rundown of what your job looks like? Second City Works gets a call. They book a live corporate date. They tell you you're doing this gig. What happens?
So we'll get on the phone with the client. They'll fill out a creative questionnaire first, which is sort of what do you do? How do you do it? Who's going to be at this thing? What night is it? What do you intend it to be, at an award ceremony or pure entertainment or some kind of learning thing? So we have a discussion about that. And then shortly after, I'll ask them some sort of questions about the tone of the event. How serious is it? Can we bring some of your people up on stage and have fun with them? Is this going to be some terrible news unfolding that we need to sort of protect them from? And then I'll write a running order. Some writers usually write some scenes. Mm-hmm. We'll send them back and forth between us and client and talk them over and see how well they fit. After that, we assemble a running order, do a rehearsal, sometimes preview it with them if they're really nervous, and then otherwise present it. It's sort of really run and gun because it's a one-night-only type of deal, and we don't get a second chance at it too often.
All right. So, and you're performing a lot of times in, like, in, you know, hotels, right, and
ballrooms,
conference centers,
yep,
that sort of thing. Okay. So this is what I'm interested in. What is the weirdest place or the most unusual place that you've done one of these corporate shows?
Wow. Last week we were in the Sticks in Louisiana, mm-hmm, and it was an open air pavilion, mm-hmm, and a rainstorm came like straight up from the Gulf and just blasted, like blew over the curtains. Like a lot of exposed electrical curtain material was kind of exposed to this wet rain.
Fantastic.
It was followed by a kind of a debaucherous crawfish boil that we all took part in, but the show went great. Standing ovation.
Wild. All right. Yeah. Well, outdoors is not a friend to comedy normally, right?
No, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
At Navy Pier, if you've been down at the end, the big ballroom down there, it's kind of
the crystal ballroom.
Crystal ballroom.
Yeah.
Which you'd probably need one to figure out how to do a show in there. It's almost impossible.
The sound is just so bad for live comedy.
Well, fair enough. Here's a story. So it was probably about 6 years ago. So I hopefully whoever worked there at that point is no longer there or moved on. But
in Chicago, they're not there.
Okay, good. We were in the middle of a show and it was going terrifically bad. And and then over the microphones, because everyone wears these lavalier mics, I start to hear a snoring sound. And I think it's one of our actors commenting on how dead the room is. So I scatter downstairs and go looking for all the actors, and the two on stage are not making a snoring sound. No, none of the actors downstairs are making a snoring sound. It works out that one of the audio techs is up in the booth, falling asleep with a lav on the desk and is snoring directly into it. And there's not a damn thing I can do about it because it's no less than 100 yards away.
Yes.
So we suffer it for about 3/4 of the scene, and I'm scrambling. I'm calling the other techs on the headset. I'm like, who's snoring? Oh, and they finally wake the guy up, but nobody ever admits to it, and it's still today.
I recall I was at a corporate event in Las Vegas that we did with Martin Short and Acura.
Yeah.
And the opening song was a whole song, customized song written about Acura. This might get, if you hear bleeping sounds on this, it's that the guy who runs Second City Works has redacted the name of the client, but I'm just going to go with it.
Yeah.
And Marty, even though we've talked about the name of this company, he calls it Acura. So the opening number, he gets the company name wrong in the song. He keeps saying Acura.
Uh-huh.
And then he recognizes that the audience is not with him. And in a two-person scene, he just starts making cricket noises. And so you're hearing these cricket noises. Like, what is that coming from? Oh, it's Martin Short on stage doing it.
Commenting on the thing he's in.
Yes.
Which is the most meta thing you can do.
Right. So I know one of the things we often talk about in our work, and I think in most people's work, is the idea of setting people up for success.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you want to make sure when you hire someone that you give them all the tools and the environment in which those individuals or groups can do their best work. But that doesn't always happen for Second City on corporate gigs, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. What in your, you know, history are ways in which we've just exactly not been set up for success before we start a show?
The one most notable one, and it was early in my career, but it was such a deep wound. I remember it well.
Yes.
We were all standing there, and there's sort of a kind of a small conversation about how we're going to be introduced, and then the guy says, "Yeah, we'll just dish it to you, and then we'll go blackout, and you guys can play on music.
Do your comedy show,
yeah.
Make everyone laugh." Yeah.
And just before, there's some commotion at the stage, and you see the guy kind of take new direction from somebody else, and he says, "Oh, you know what? Everyone knows that Jim, our CEO, passed last week, and it's we're all still dealing with this tragedy." And Jim loved to laugh. And so that's why we brought Second City here. But actually tonight we'd like to have Jim's wife come up and just speak a few words about Jim.
And oh, no.
She proceeded to give one of the most beautiful but heartbreaking eulogies of her husband. And I think her last words were also like in through the deepest sobs. Like, Jim also loved to laugh.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Please welcome Second City. So you wouldn't know this, but like our first scene is a scene called Morning Person, where a guy comes out singing as loud as he can and someone shoots him dead. My hope, knowing I had milliseconds to relay to anybody, just cut straight to intro, go to a game, go right to something really.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I was like, and of course they were probably like grab-assing backstage,
yep.
And not paying attention to what was happening. I was like, somebody's got to know to cut that scene. And they didn't. They did it. And it was the bleakest silence I've been a part of.
Oh, no. The worst way to start
but
a comedy show.
It makes me laugh so hard when that happens.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. So number one, probably don't start a comedy show and have the act before be a eulogy for a dead person.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
not a good idea.
Exactly.
I gotcha. You know, another thing in terms of the and we won't just stay on this track, but let's go down a little farther.
Sure.
We now, it's my understanding, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but we turned down dates that we used to like just take all the time when we were a much smaller company.
Absolutely.
A scrappier company. We actually needed to make payroll. Second City's doing pretty well these days.
Sure.
Can you think of a gig that we did that we would turn down now?
I mean, there's a myriad of kind of questions they'd ask us. I think at one point there was some sailor theme that they asked us to be. They said, "Can you guys wear sailor suits for the duration?" I said, "Actually, no, we can't do it." And they said, "It really means the gig or not." And I was like, "No, we can't do it." And they're like, "Okay, you can still do the gig." But
all right,
we had taken a couple. I think. Here's one. It's more recent and more of a story about how we didn't really help ourselves. There's a day school, a big Jewish day school up north, which
okay.
will remain nameless.
Okay, great.
Terrific operation.
Yep.
But it's conservative
yep.
church, and it's men only, so half of our stories had to be in drag, or if we wanted to do something, it was completely.
So no women could do the show?
No women were allowed to do the show.
Got it.
And it was a split stage. There was two separate stages for 5,000 people at the UIC
wow.
Pavilion. So it
wow.
was a big gig, and I'm certain yeah. there was a stack of cash involved, but like it was clearly a really bad decision.
Uh-huh.
And I think there was all kinds of stipulations that were new to me. I kind of have a cursory knowledge of conservative Judaism, but like it wasn't enough to get by on. And like, you know, they said, make no mention of God. And half of our scenes have somebody just saying the word God in them. And I think before the show, during an intro, it was during the voiceover, please welcome to Second City. And somebody sneezed in a room of 5,000 people that was quiet. And I think whoever the pianist was said, God bless you, as just an impromptu joke. And yeah. half the room laughed and half the room gasped, you know, because yes. You can't do it.
Yes.
And then not to mention a couple guys in the cast looked super Aryan, like they were kind of tall, blonde-haired guys. And
right.
We opened with a song that just crapped the bed immediately.
Didn't work.
And then to our luck, there was a guy named Joel Mayer who's mm-hmm. deeply religious and mm-hmm. came out and did an impromptu 7-minute set of all like shul jokes, deep
sure.
things you would only know if you'd just been to Passover 10
right.
times.
Right. He killed.
He crushed yep. and saved our lives, yep. honestly. But it was only because we kind of let off the pedal and started in a new direction.
So I had a memory of the worst gig, and I don't know if you were on it or not. I got a call, and it was an unbelievable thing because I thought someone was doing a bit. But I got a call from Eunice Kennedy Shriver.
Okay.
And to understand what it means for me to be in communication with a Kennedy, my dad covered when he was a reporter in Boston the Kennedys. He covered Joe Kennedy, his famous story about that.
Yep.
He met Joe Kennedy for an interview once, and maybe 4 or 5 years later, he was covering Jack's run for the presidency. Joe finds him in a crowd of people at the airport and goes, "Roy, so good to see you again."
Come on.
Now, yeah, but I mean, this is the original,
so right?
Yeah. I'm sure he had someone saying who it was and all that, but just like killer. And we had a bust of Kennedy in our living room. And my mom, when we would do Second City shows and we would do a joke about Kennedy, it was the one thing that really disappointed her. And was like, you know what? You're better than that.
Yeah, of course.
You know, anything. We could do anything else and it was fun. So Eunice Kennedy Shriver calls and wants Second City to perform at a Special Olympics event.
Mm-hmm.
So right now I should turn this down. Right?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. There's no good way for this story to end or to happen. But no, I want to fulfill, you know, sure. you know, and help. And like, so I'm like, you know, giving you a bargain. Like, we got paid, but it yeah. was like, you know, all that.
Yeah.
And very clearly, we talked to the cast before about, look, you know, you've just got to stay away from any disability humor. Just
sure.
got to stay away from it. So very first scene, very first improv. So we do a scene and then we do an improv. That's kind of how we do it.
Yeah.
And within, I mean, seconds, the worst word you can say gets said.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And we're done. And we basically cut the show
yeah.
about 10, 12 minutes later because it's clear we're done.
It's party over.
And she's so disappointed.
Oh, my God.
And she tells the cast how disappointed and maybe they need to understand about the word they said.
Yeah.
And, you know, we gave back the money and it was just like,
oh,
and,
God.
You know, and I only tell the story because my parents are dead and they can't hear it.
I wasn't on that gig, but I wouldn't have put it past my calibration because certainly I've stepped in crap so many times.
And the person who said it, and I hope she's listening because she still works for Second City
okay.
in the training center. Her initials are RM. All right, so
oh God,
we don't just complain about our work. We don't just do terrible jobs on the road.
No.
This is really bad sales.
Yeah, no,
job.
This is not meant to.
All right, what you know? Have you met incredibly cool people? And what cool things have happened when you do these gigs?
Well, a bunch of amazing things. Honestly, like getting to more often than not, people even with the historical knowledge of Second City, there's still, I would say, 80% of the people don't know what we're just about to do. So mm-hmm. we walk in and we kind of give them context and they're not even quite sure what improvisation and sketch and how that it's distinct. And so frankly, more often than not, there's some nervousness, and especially with our improv where we bring a lot of people up.
Right.
We end up taking care of everybody because it's never to kind of to make them look terrible. So
yeah.
it ends up really blowing their minds.
Mm-hmm.
And great. I mean, famous people come and go, and we've had chances to do improv games with Madeleine Albright, with Justin Timberlake. We did a show with for Ryder Cup, which was super fun.
Mm-hmm.
Although he had a song he was supposed to do with us.
Who?
Justin. And his agent came and watched us in rehearsal because it was all very tentative. And he was an envoy from the entertainment world to the Ryder Cup, which was in Chicago this year. And his agent was like, no, he can't do it. And We're like, you sure? It's going to make him look great. And he said, no, he won't. So we brought in a guy, Mike Kaczynski, came in and learned it in all 10 minutes and just blew doors.
Yeah.
And then Justin, I think, was sort of coming around on being a stand-up or trying some stand-up. And he had a guy from SNL he dragged along with him and wrote a five-minute set.
Yeah.
And so he came over to the green room right before he was introducing himself. I said, I'm sorry, I can't do the song. I mean, he didn't make any excuses for it. He's like, I'm going to do the set and see how that goes. And so he did this set, and it completely bombed. Oh, but I'm like, and everybody in the cast, I was kind of like, Jesus, we could have made you look great, you know? And like, and he walked away. And the song, it was also sort of a ratio of the success of that song, which mowed him down.
Right.
But it's sort of knowing your audience. And I think he was coming in cold and probably had never done stand-up before. But
And this is the thing, right? The unfortunate thing with entertainers who come in is thinking, well, look, I'm an entertainer. I'm just going to do my thing and entertain. Whereas Madeline Albright, not an entertainer, just comes up and probably just yes-ands, right?
She did
just
Pillars and crushed.
Oh,
and
explain what Pillars is.
So Pillars is a kind of a fill-in-the-blank game. Like two actors start a scene at any point during the scene. They'll touch this volunteer on the seat, and all they do is fill in the first word or phrase that comes to mind. Well, she not only did that, she did ironic, absurd, cogent responses the whole way. And, I mean, this was in D.C. for a D.C. crowd, but still it was blowing doors. And I was like, that's maybe the best one I've seen of those.
Yep.
And from a lady who was at that point probably 69, 70, somewhere in there, she was so poised and so put together. And, you know, she's just so sharp. So it was cool. And other times, you know, we have a lot of our alumni come back who are better or worse depending on who you are. Some of our guys are actually said mortally afraid of improv, which is like the 70s guys. They're like, I don't know, man. but if you protect them and take care of them, they do great. But the wins for us are always like going into some strange spot. Like, honestly, last week in Louisiana, we walked in and those people had very little ideas to what we did, and we really knocked them out.
So you know, and I know because I've been on some of these dates, right? So especially in the old days, it would not be unusual for us to show up and someone has forgotten to put up a stage.
Absolutely.
Right. And you're in like a high school. You're like, what are we doing here?
You know? Yeah.
And then it's also not unusual for you to go in and the level of extravagance is off the charts.
Absolutely.
What is the most extravagant, just like obscene wealth, waste of money on our services that you've seen?
Here's one. So a beer company, they had an event for all their vendors. So basically people that buy their beer, I think, in a regional level. So it was a pretty big event. And it had a secret headliner, which they were never going to say who it was. And then intermittently they had Second City and a couple Canadian guys. I want to say Greg Proops and what's the other guy? Colin Mockery?
Yeah, Colin Mockery, who is Canadian. I don't know if the Greg Proops is Canadian.
Well, they were doing sort of the MC hosting thing, Pussycat Dolls, the OJs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
The OJs.
It was a big – I mean, they had a big train in this –
literally ball, a train.
A train, yeah. And, but the closer was TBD or to be announced. And so the night goes on forever. It's about 3 hours and I know it's who it is. And but these MCs, they have a lot of jobs. So people are trickling out. And by the time they get to this headliner, it's 30 people. And they do a long announcement. I hear over the headset, like, hey, man, I want to get started. And they're like, just a second. We just have to do a couple more ad tie-ins. So these guys do a couple. Like, it goes on 3 minutes. And finally, just starts cranking on American Girl, and it's Tom Petty playing for 30 people.
No!
Yeah. Just like, and he plays an hour, and he takes $1 million and walks away. But, like, we were 2 deep, 15 wide at a Tom Petty concert.
And like, 6 of those are you.
Absolutely.
So there's really like 25 people there.
They all cruised.
Because it was too late. And they didn't know who it was.
And,
so they
were too opaque about it. So people were like, forget it.
Oh, there's a lesson.
Yeah.
Can you think of the cheapest thing you've ever been a part of?
Yeah. I mean, there's been some basement shows with like a light switch, you know, type of deal. So similarly to the Tom Petty one, someone announced Jimmy Buffett, and it was a guy.
An impersonator?
An impersonator that they didn't really cop to. And then about 3 songs in, everybody got it and like left. They were out of Margaritaville.
No.
So it was like Jimmy Buffet. Like so close.
You don't Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah. I know. So, but the cheapest ones have been sort of basement. And they actually sort of turn out to be fun-loving sometimes.
Yeah. Okay, I want to sidetrack the conversation for a moment because you and I have known each other for ever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I actually don't believe you and I have ever had an actual conversation about this in person.
Okay.
The thing that we're about to talk to about. I know.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know what I'm going to talk to you about.
I do know.
You do? Okay.
Yeah.
So, because we haven't, right? We have not talked about
this? I think not.
Okay. But we both know. I mean, literally, Pat and I have known each other since the early 90s.
Yep.
We've never actually worked that closely together, though we, you know, we've done bits. So, you know, what better place to bring it up than a recorded podcast than anyone in the world can hear? So as I mentioned in the introduction, you know, you trained at Second City as a writer and a performer.
Yep.
And you've continued to flex those muscles in a variety of work that you do at the Second City and other places.
Yep.
So part of my job at Second City for years was overseeing auditions for new talent at the Second City. And we hold general auditions every year. We see hundreds, if not thousands of people. Many of whom we've seen at previous auditions, right? Because we're out seeing other shows, or they might work at Second City, and this is sort of their path. And many years back, a group of auditionees were brought into the room, and one of the people auditioning was fairly clearly wearing a fake mustache and a beard. And I equate it to sort of a Colonel Sanders look, like a dark Colonel Sanders look.
Absolutely.
And his headshot was similarly doctored with a fake name, I believe a Southern name.
Mm-hmm.
And because everyone in the room immediately knew that it was you.
Right.
We figured that out fairly quickly, and we had to make the split-second decision, and this is the default, and behavioral scientists will back me up on this. The default behavior is to do nothing. So we did nothing. We pretended that everything was fine.
Right.
You auditioned in character.
Yeah.
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 I don't believe you got called back.
I didn't get a call back. I mean, I think he should have gotten a call back, but I don't think
you
I deserve
don't need it. All right. So my question is how and why.
Yeah.
Why and how.
Great.
How and why.
All right. So at that point, I think this is probably the third or fourth. And I had very little hope of like ever getting.
And you know that a lot of people get hired on their third or fourth.
Sure.
It's very few.
Okay. Yeah. So I was kind of. Here was the trick for me. Like, for me to have blown this out and had it been magical, I would have to have destroyed some other people's chances. So it only occurs to me in the middle of this, like, I'm trying to do the great thing in improv, which is make your partner look good. But I've also concocted this. Elaborate.
Yes.
Character.
Never been done before.
Thank you. No.
By the way.
First time ever for me.
Well, at least in my 27, 28 years.
I mean, I hope there's a whole bunch of other maniacs. But at that point, I was like, oh, Jesus, now I bear the weight of this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Simultaneously, don't want to sandbag these up-and-comers. So I proceeded to do the character as well as I could while doing characters as the character.
Yes.
The justification was like you had seen me and I was going to have some fun and kind of make you guys
some Andy Kaufman
crap
move
yourselves
that would get,
a little.
Yeah.
And it worked because like as soon as I came in, Beth goes, thank you for doing this. And then as I walked out, she's like, why did you do this?
Beth Kligerman, who is the director of casting development at the Second City.
My hope was that in the middle of the day, it would have been some light for you guys to kind of go on and you would have been like, that guy's a maniac, but he's fun.
Oh, yeah.
But then beyond that, I didn't think through that I might have trafficked somebody else's opportunity, so I was really
which you pushed. Didn't.
And that's my point. So sacrifice for the bit, which is a rough way to go. But
well, I think the thing that you were doing, and I'm guessing this, but you can tell me if I'm right, is you were upending expectation.
Yeah.
So yes. All right. So this is an important thing as it comes to our work.
Yeah.
Because a lot of what Second City is doing by just showing up in a corporate space. Is upending expectation.
Totally.
We don't belong there, so that alone should be a thing.
Yep.
And then we have a job to do. And just as you sort of figured out, like, oh, I shouldn't be here in this character because of this, so what I am going to do then is serve the room I'm in.
Yeah.
And that in itself can be a thing of beauty.
Totally.
You know, or you know, you can shit the bed, which happens when all the other stuff isn't around you know, to protect it.
Absolutely.
But I think that's an important, you know, aspect that we learn at Second City and that's in our bones that is absolutely important for businesses and not even just businesses, for people to understand because we have these routines that we get stuck in.
Yeah.
And many of us want to be creative and I think a lot of people sort of say, well, I'm not creative. I'm not innovative.
Right.
And the fact is it's like, no, you're just not
selecting it.
Being.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I totally agree. And it's a certain amount of courage to be fair. That's the big thing because that may be what we're training. Is courage versus any aesthetics. It's just the steel to do those kind of things. And to your point about the surprise thing, which I think is essential to comedy in its nature, like, and it's not my quote, but it's Pasquazi's. He said
David Pasquazi, yeah. Second City alum, yeah.
He said that, and I'm not going to nail this because I never do, but like he said that the essence of comedy is surprise, and it's the reason you can do a magic trick only once, because once you've figured it out, it's no longer surprising. But comedy is different, and you do it over and over again, and people are always surprised because it's new each time. Mm-hmm. It's probably poorly put. It was some version of that, but the idea is surprise is comedy in itself.
Yeah.
So any expectation upset, even if it is, I mean, there's the weird one, the Tripler joke, where you go, where they can't believe you've done it again, which is its own surprise. Like, there's no way he's going to make the same mistake this fifth time. And you do it, and you still crush. And that's, I mean, there's so many aesthetics that fit that same surprise model, which
Well, that's you know, because it is a combination of math and magic, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And the math is, you know, in the comedy business, there's a thing called the rule of three, and when you try to sort of draw out or diagram a joke, often it's, you know, and it's a rule of three, and then we laugh because there's people we've worked with, Ron West being one of them, a famous Second City director who believed in nothing less than the rule of nine.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, really? Are you going to carpet bomb this joke? I guess you are. And it does work. It's not that doesn't.
But it goes in that weird, like, parabola. It goes down for a second, then up and down again. It's definitely got a wave to it.
Yeah. And that's the skill part that when you come to Second City as a professional that you can get trained in. But I think the thing that we frankly are probably more interested in, for a lot of us who've worked there a long time, is I get it. I get the professional part. What can the person who's just walking in the door take with them? And that's the improv stuff.
That's right.
That is this idea of bravery, of resilience, of taking a chance, taking a risk, of looking foolish and coming out the other end.
That's right. And honestly, and this is a trouble for me, because I'm a perfectionist in some ways, and like it's hard to kind of come to terms with the very job is sometimes just being foolish but not embarrassed, which is the trickiest thing, you know, because our egos are attached to all of this.
Yep.
And if you get started on something, you want to execute. Well, in this case, it's the opposite of most other executions, which is like you don't look more awesome. You look more hilarious doing it. And it's a really tricky aesthetic to get to. And people who are humorless, there are a few of them, and most people aren't. Have a heck of a time coming to terms with this, because it's really the job is to bust your own ego.
Right.
And if you're doing great and you have the steel to do it, and also environmentally you're like supported by the people watching you do it and they're excited to see you take a chance, that's exactly the right situation.
We were talking about something before I came in the studio, which I'd sort of love to touch on a little bit. So we'd go and do these corporate gigs and they're hiring us usually to get across some sort of message.
Sure.
And so we write these scenes. And you and I were talking outside about what happens, right, when you get on site and the client starts to say, well, can you add this? Can you add that?
Yeah.
And what that does to the comedy.
Yeah. I mean, that happens in the earlier part of the process as well, too. But absolutely on site, when they're sort of panicked with their decision or they're sort of sweating, was this right? And they're sort of in the throes of it. And they realize now that the presidents are here and the vice presidents are here. And this is all kinds of new challenges. And earlier the day didn't go great. So they start to add a bunch of freight. Or like either be technical or sort of business speak or even just kind of motto stuff that they want to reinforce.
Right.
And you're talking to them about sort of the grace of the message, which is it's finding the sweet spot of creating something that's useful and interesting and beautiful to their audience, but simultaneously not didactic and not too preachy and not too sure of itself. Like the one great thing that Second City can bring is sort of a proxy empathy for the company. The very fact that they brought you in and you've made a little fun of yourself and you've been a little self-effacing creates a humility around your company, which companies can't because they're constantly, you know, marketing and branding themselves. So they bring Second City in to say, look, we get it. This is going to be a tricky transition. We appreciate you guys hustling. We know you've done great work up until now. We know we're making this switch at the last minute. Please bear with us. And so they can't say that in a mission statement because it sounds like they're folding. But they can have Second City come in and say a version of that. And all the employees are like, oh, geez, somebody thought that is worth speaking to. And that's where we deliver.
Right. And comedy not only is a very authentic medium, but it is also the way that one can talk about difficult things.
Yep.
In a way that can make it a little bit palatable. And you know, again, we're not going to do our dirtiest, edgiest material for the corporate audience because they'd get in trouble. But there is a, you know, in the corporate environment, there's so much non-truth telling that it's not hard to do something sort of unique for that environment.
Yeah, and it's so charming, like it because people have been hearing this language, this speak, anything that covers the human part of business, and then we come in and we're human, and they love it.
Yep. So, all right, we're drawing to a close. And one of the things that we talk about with every guest who comes on here is, you know, the show's called Getting to Yes And. So right. I want to talk to you about a Yes And moment that you might have, and I'll give you a second to think about it. But cool. The idea here is, you know, is there a point in your life where you can look at where you decided to say yes and to something, or conversely said no to something?
Yeah. I mean, these are going to be big moments for me, like mm-hmm. life moments. I mean, certainly at work, it's become part and parcel of my life. Just on the day-to-day and even sort of conventionally, like in a smaller way, we were doing gig for Qdoba and they're like, the world's your oyster. And I sent a red herring basically. I was like, well, we'll do a rock opera, a three-day rock opera for you. And they're like, okay. And I was like, Jesus.
What did I get myself into?
What's going to happen?
Yeah.
But more specifically, personally, like there's been a lot of them. And I'm not a terrifically, like I sort of was raised sort of cynically, mm-hmm. and so that's probably why I ended up in improv, because I knew I needed that muscle worked, and still do, frankly. But I was talking to someone about the birth of my kids today. She's a woman who was mm-hmm. pregnant, and she's having her kids over at Prentice, and we had ours there too. But I had these bohemian midwives from across the street,
sure,
and like. And they know enough to spring shit on you. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think it was my first son's birth, and they're like, I'm at the top. I'm in the blind spot.
Yeah.
And then she's like, hey, come on down here, Pat. And I look at my wife, Pam. She gives me the no face, and
yeah,
I was like,
do
like, don't do it, because you're gonna really.
Oh no, I was.
You're looking into
I've
the
been
void.
There. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
It's a testimony to libidos, really, that you can still recover from that. And
God
like,
bless.
And but ended up down there in the hatch and.
in the hatch,
and then caught my baby, and like, yeah. And then cut the cord with those really unhandy scissors, and
they're terrible.
There's no,
yeah, you really have to work it.
Yeah, and that's the gross part because it's even like
I wasn't able to do it.
No, it's so slick.
I got help.
You
got
to get a guy, but I think it's really it was kind of amazing, and I never would have done it, and if all my people from school and college. They're very locked down. I went to business school. You know, I have friends who are kind of, but I've been raised feral now. Like I'm with the bohemian gypsies, and we go nuts.
Pat McKenna, thank you for joining us on Getting to Yes And.
Thanks, Kelly.
Well, I've been working in a coal mine, going down, working in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down, working in a coal mine, going down, working in a coal mine, whoop,
This is Second City Works, Getting to Yes And. You can find us at WGNplus.com. You can stream us on the WGN Plus app, or you can find us on iTunes. See you next week.